Hello and welcome to the First and Ten podcast. Sort of feels like a new season, really. Draft's over. We're moving on to actual football now, well, in the not too distant future. Joining me to look back at that draft, though, before we move on properly, is Ash. How are you, mate?
I'm really good. Just got over the tiredness of the 3 days.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It
That
is.
run. So
It is
yeah, so
indeed.
long couple of nights, and then
With the
yeah,
full intent, like I said to you before, the full intention of staying up for day two. Most of the time it gets recorded because it's so long.
Yeah, and when you record it, you can skip through a little bit, can't you, as well, like through
Yeah,
the
because day two, they get all these players to announce all the picks, don't they? So it feels like it takes forever.
Well, it feels like that sometimes the picks in for about three teams along and they just haven't announced them yet, don't they? It's it's quite weird, but yeah, I mean, them picks always get telegraphed and then posted on Twitter by people for some reason. I don't know why some of them do it. Like Albert Breer was doing it this year. Like, does he really need the whatever the attention of just announcing a pick like 2 minutes before everyone else? Like, I get it when someone, a bit smaller would do it, but why is someone like Albert Breer doing it? He's got God knows how many followers on here anyway.
I
Yeah,
know.
irritating. But so I only actually looked at Twitter about three times, and every single time I did, I saw the next pick. Like, and I
Yeah,
think two of them were the
it's really
quarterbacks
annoying, isn't it?
early. Yeah, so frustrating because I just look by habit, in these days. But what can you do? Well, we'll get straight into it. I mean, night one was a bit of a wild one in the end, wasn't it? It was, the players overall may be predictable. In our mock last week, whenever it was, it feels like forever ago. We had six quarterbacks going. We thought it was a bit of a wild choice, and maybe it was a bit of a reach. But I mean, we had them going by the end of the first round, and by 12, they're all out of there. I mean, did you see this coming in any way? Could you have seen that Bo Nix would be the sixth quarterback taken at number 12?
No, I mean, if you told me the landing spots of the quarterbacks, I would have probably have given you definitely four. That I really was convinced that JJ McCarthy would end up in Minnesota, Bo Nix would end up in Denver, Daniels would end up in Washington, and Caleb would end up in Chicago. I think I had all four of them in my mock. Not obviously, Denver wasn't that high. I had them moving down and doing it, but obviously the wild one was what you were going to do. And Daniel Jeremiah talked about it, that you did get some very, very good offers on his last podcast. That everything I heard, it was that you Minnesota offered you four firsts, and I think the New York Giants offered you three. To drop down to six is what I kind of got the inkling from. So that's why I kind of had that pegged as in my draft, in my mock, that the Giants would move up to your spot to take for three. But I think that you made the right choice personally. I think that Drake May, for me, he should have gone number two overall. But I think that with all them quarterbacks, I quite like quite a few of the landing spots. Obviously, the main surprise, probably it shocked everybody across the whole world, was the Michael Penix one at eight from Atlanta, which was just mind-boggling, really. But the other landing spots I could see, but just obviously having six go in the top 12, I mean, it's unprecedented. It's never been done before, so it was definitely a surprise.
Well, we'll get into that Michael Penix pick because I think out of all of them, that's probably the wildest. I mean, the Falcons have signed Kirk Cousins in the offseason. What was it, about 80 million guaranteed, something like that? But a big old deal. They've What the last 4 years, 3 years at least, they've spent top 10 picks on players that they didn't necessarily need, a bit luxury picks, and maybe they should have drafted a quarterback at those times, but never did. And I do understand it's a different regime, but now they've got their quarterback. They sort of in a little bit of a win now mode. I don't think you're signing Kirk Cousins if you're looking at the future. They've got the chance to make the team better at eight, and then Michael Penix is the name selected. Were you one of the few people that sort of So this is a good pick, or do you think this was insane? Like sort of
I think it's
98.
insane,
Yeah.
personally. Yeah,
Yeah.
I don't really see the logic of people saying it was a good pick. Like, I can understand it's a good pick if you don't sign Kirk Cousins to a $180 million contract, but
Yeah,
like,
fine at that stage, yeah. Like, no, I don't think anyone would have any arguments with that if that was it.
100%.
And
But
he
it's
was just
just
their
that,
guy over McCarthy or something, then fine, like
So I mean, this was done. So I heard a few people have talked about it, and they took a big shine into Penix at the combine, apparently Atlanta, but by this time free agency hadn't started. So if you had taken a shine to the quarterback at the combine, then why go out and spend the most, well, the highest paid contract of free agency on a quarterback? You could have been in the Russell Wilson sweepstakes or the Justin Fields sweepstakes and then draft Penix. That's a more, if I was looking at it, that's a more logical way to do it, because you're not investing huge amount of money or huge amount of capital, because they've done both. They've invested huge amount of money on Kirk Cousins and then high draft capital on Michael Penix Jr. It just doesn't work out to me. Like, if they had gone out and got Penix Jr. at eight and they had got Russell Wilson or, like I said, Justin Fields or something like that, then that's more of a logical explanation of, we've got this 1 year rental of Wilson, we've got a 1 year rental of Fields, see how he does, and then we can bring Penix in. Understandable. But if you've got Kirk Cousins, you're swallowing that amount of dead money. It's just utter madness. I just don't know what they're doing. And a few people have made up good points as well. It's like when Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, the Philadelphia Eagles got Hurts. I mean, no, that was a second round pick, but even then, people were like, oh, that's quite high for the Eagles to do that after they've just paid Carson Wentz. And then they signed a lot of the younger guys, and then the younger guys would gravitate to the same draft classes as such. So obviously the young guys hang around with the young guys, sort of thing. So you can see where, like, if Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, after the, like, when you go to training, they're going to do all the drills and stuff like that. They're not going to be hanging around with Kirk Cousins. They're going to be hanging around with Michael Penix. So maybe that's going to even make it even harder for them to get this scenario working. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be a really weird locker room, because Kirk Cousins is going to have to come straight off that Achilles, and it's going to have to hit the ground running for this Michael Penix situation not to be a thing over his head. So it's just a bizarre thing, which I was stunned for about 5 minutes. Like, didn't really know what to say, what to do, what to tweet, anything. So yeah, it's been a bit of a mad one with that one.
Yeah, and as you say, like, if they fall in love with him from early in the process, fine. Just don't sign Cousins, because he was always going to be there at eight, wasn't he? It's not like
100%.
If they wanted to pick him at eight, they were getting him at eight. No one was taking him before that spot. And right. Yeah, it's just absolutely mad to me. And just another year that the Falcons just do something to, I don't know, just infuriate me. Like, I don't know how people are fans of this team. Like, I absolutely despise them and I actually don't care about them. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a fan of this team, I don't know how. You have to be the most positive of fans, I think, to look at this.
And,
that this was a good move. And I do understand there's people out there, they're going to be saying it's a good move just for a bit of clickbait as well. I do understand that some of the takes of, like, this is a good move. There are going to be people that have convinced themselves that this is ideal and, you know, moving on to him in 2 years. Because I saw so many people talk about Jordan Love. But, like, I don't know why Jordan Love's been sort of, you know, just thrown in as, like, this, like, nailed on, like, top 10 quarterback all of a sudden. Like, just after, on the back of, what, like, 6-7 good games at the end of last season? It was very inconsistent to start the season.
Yeah.
And he did have a good finish, I'm not denying that, but, like, you know, as sort of like the blueprint, I just don't understand how this is sort of like how he's being used as like a real defense for anything, because for all we know, this season he could come out and just look awful again, and the Packers are drafting a quarterback this time next year. You know, I just think people have sort of got a little bit ahead of themselves on Jordan Love, especially to use him as sort of a reason for this just bizarre move.
Yeah, definitely agree. Like, and even then, like, you're talking about a team within Green Bay that had, there was a contract dispute going on with Rodgers, I think, at the time. It wasn't as clear cut as we've literally just gone out and signed Kirk Cousins. Like, there was this sort of, I might retire, I might not scenario that was going on in the background for Aaron Rodgers at the time. So, because it wasn't the first time that another team's come in for and asked about Rodgers before. So, and then obviously they took Love, and then it just instigated it to go further and further and further on as an agenda and a saga. But yeah, this one's just going to, it's like I said, it was just such a shock for me to see him go that hurt that early. When, like I said, we've been, and probably most of the market have been pegging other players to them for the majority of the pre-draft.
Yeah, and honestly, I think if they took any other player in the whole of this first round that wasn't a quarterback, like their team's improved. Like pretty much any player that came up in the like what 24 picks or whatever after them.
Yeah.
If they had just taken any of those players, like Roma Dunze, like if they take him, like I'm not saying they need him, but like their team would be better for it, like going into the start of the season where like actually I don't know, I just can't get my head around it. But I mean, it's been so much said about it already, so we should probably move on from that. Let's look at wide receivers. Some pretty good landing spots, I think. You know, I think sort of some of these spots, I think we sort of predicted last week, or at least sort of spoke about. So definitely the Bears, if Adunze looked like that could be a move, especially as he seemed to sort of spark up a relationship with Williams. Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals, I think sort of we sort of knew going into draft that was probably going to happen. Neighbors to the Giants, maybe less so, just because the Giants were involved in a trade talk, but I mean, they're top three. Obviously, they were the sort of standout receivers. Are you sort of happy with where they've all landed? Like in real life, hands that were a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, 100%. I think I think everyone mostly pegged that Marvin Harrison was going to go to Arizona. It didn't really look like it was ever going to be a scenario where they're going to trade out. Obviously, like they had the little inklings early on in the like. Down near the combine and stuff like that, there was all the talks that we might trade out, but it looked as it went on and on and on, it never looked like they were ever really going to move. So I think that one was pretty much pegged on. I really thought that we would take a wide receiver. I mean, I like how the Chargers did it in the end, that they didn't do that, but and it worked out all right for them. But with the Giants, obviously getting Neighbors, that was the Drake May. And if they weren't going to get Drake May, then they were happy to stick and pick one of these wide receivers. I thought they might go more Roma Dunze. I thought it might have been more their sort of player, but I don't think that they'll have a problem. Last LSU wide receiver panned out all right at the New York Giants. Yeah, so
they've done okay.
Yeah, that one went all right. So I think that it's a good pick. I don't know if it's a great pick, a great land spot for Neighbors, but it's a good pick for the Giants. I mean, they've been desperately needing a wide receiver and alpha for a long time, really. So probably since Beckham left, to be honest, I would say. So the Roma Dunze. I mean, I don't think you could have asked for a better sort of landing spot for him in regards to a long-term dynasty outlook. I mean, you've got Caleb Williams has dropped in as the QB and is probably, in regards to the last 10 years worth of prospects, he's probably in the top three to ever come out and be this highly ranked. And then you're dropping in a wide receiver that's equally as highly ranked. I did mention it on the on my mock that the Bears, although it looks like they've got an abundance of riches at wide receiver with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. Keenan Allen's on that 1 year deal still. And DJ Moore need to be paid in 2 years. So they've one eye on the future and these two can just grow together, which I think is, I love the fact that you do that and get sort of like the wide receiver quarterback stack. You've talked about it before as well. I think
I always love it when they do that.
It's nothing better, I think, for a wide receiver and a quarterback to be able to grow together.
Yeah. I mean, we see it a few times over the years, and I think it's always such a good move. So, like, I don't think there's been any that haven't worked out or when they do that sort of thing, have they, really? It's just such a nice thing for them. You say, like, maybe short term, his fantasy sort of prospects aren't amazing at the Bears just because he might be the third, maybe fourth option there. But it's like, long term, I think he couldn't have picked, he couldn't have got a better landing spot, really. And I think he will get his share in year one, even if it's not, you know, maybe what the other two might get, but, you know. I don't think it'd be too bad with that. We're on receivers, might as well look at some of the others. Oh, go on, what are you saying? Sorry.
No, 100% totally agree. Yeah. With like you said, with having them as your three standout wide receivers and Dunze and Williams, I mean, I think they're going to be, even though, like you said, you're not going to have that amazing fantasy outlook for maybe this year, I still think that Rome will put up a solid account as a wide receiver three.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we had, four more wide receivers come off the board, three of them very late in the first round, but Brian Thomas, the next off the board. Jags is a pretty good landing spot for him there, isn't it? I feel like he's got a real chance to, you know, really go and sort of make a role for himself there.
Yeah, he's it looks like the wide receiver 2-3 now. They just released Say Jones, so this competition now for targets has gone down and they'll probably use him in that Calvin Ridley role, I'd have thought. Gabe Davis is quite a big bodied outside guy, but Brian Thomas is, you could probably move him around a little bit more. Be interesting to see how it all works as one, because obviously in some ways I feel like they've got three guys that not have similar attributes, but I've got that sort of, they're pretty quick guys, pretty strong bodied, etc. So yeah, it's be interesting to see how that looks alongside Evan Ingram as well. So, but there's a good landing spot for him. Obviously Jags did well trading down and still getting him. I thought they did really well. They've stayed ahead of Dallas and that for that pick. So yeah, it was good work from the Jags to be able to do that, pull that off.
Yeah, then we've got three other wide receivers off the board, sort of in that back end of the first. I mean, any of them jump out for you? Any of them sort of excite you? I mean, Worthy to the Chiefs is a
So, I mean, everyone was saying Tyreek Hill 2.0. I don't think that's the case. I think it's more of a DeSean Jackson, because obviously Andy Reid worked with DeSean Jackson in Philadelphia. So I think it's more that sort of cup of tea, because Tyreek's just a thicker prospect. He's just a bigger body dude. So, but I do see a little bit of DeSean Jackson in Xavier Worthy, to be fair. So, and I think that's a great landing spot for Worthy. I think if Worthy could have picked anywhere to go, I think that would have been one of the ones right up there for him to be, I think he's going to come straight off the bat and do really well there. So, learn from Marquise and have Mahomes and Andy Reid, I think it's going to be great for him. Ricky Pearsall's a nice pick. I think San Francisco, they obviously loved him enough to take him 31 overall. So, but they apparently, everything I've heard since the draft is they really, really like Ricky Pearsall. So expect him to be involved quite a bit in San Francisco. And the head scratcher a little bit was Xavier Leggett to Carolina. So for me, what Jonathan Mingo excelled at when he was a rookie, to be that kind of big bodied slot. So that sort of, Michael Thomas role, that sort of role that he could have played, but they've got Xavier Leggett in. It's going to be which one does better, I guess, because I mean, Mingo was quite a high pick. He was what, 36, 37 last year as well. So it's interesting to see how this is going to blend together in regards to Carolina, because everyone was saying that wide receiver was a big need. And I was like, there's a few more other five people in front of Bryce Young that probably need to be addressed before wide receiver, to be honest. But they went for the wide receiver. I would have probably gone like center or a tackle there personally if I was Carolina Panthers.
Yeah. I mean, especially trading up as well. I don't know. It's just...
Carolina and another one, though. All of that NFC South just seems to be... Like the Saints just keep kicking the can down the road in regards to their finances every year. Like their dead money just off the charts. And then, I mean, Carolina and Atlanta, they just, I don't know where they're coming or going. So it's a funny one, really, that division.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, trading up is just not great for, you know, other than certain positions, basically quarterback and not a great deal else. I'm not saying it doesn't sometimes work, but
yeah,
I think in general, if you're trading up, it should be for, you know, either like someone, a real elite talent or, you know, a real important position. And this just does not feel like that sort of move, does it? But
no, 100%. Yeah. Like, I'm always like, if you break everything, similar to like if you play it in fantasy football, if you break things down in tiers, and then if you're going to trade up for the one, like you're going to get the last one of the tier.
Yeah.
You're not like trading up for Xavier Leggett straight after you've got Coleman and McConkey and Polk, like everyone's a bit much of a much. Like, Leggett doesn't offer anything more, I don't think, than any of these other guys that went after him. So it was just, like you said, it was just a weird scenario to trade from 33 to 32 to pull that off. Like, if you're moving up and getting Newton, say, that's, for me, that's a far more impressive move, to do something like that, because of how highly Newton was looked at as a day one prospect. So yes, it was just a funny one, but that's Carolina for you.
Yeah, definitely. But we round out the sort of fantasy relevant players, I guess, with Brock Bowers, went to the Raiders at 13. Like, seems good value if you sort of ignore the fact they drafted a tight end last year, high rate tight end last year. But, you know, Bowers is a special talent. Tight end is obviously a bit of a disaster of a position when it comes to drafting, but Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about this as just a landing spot for him? Sort of if you take out some of the other, you know, the issues that maybe the Raiders had by picking another tight end.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is another one where it's a real head scratcher for me. Like, there's probably four or five picks from that first round which are head scratchers, and this would be one of them. Like, you take Michael Mayer early round two, and he's done nothing to say that he's not going to be worth that as a tight end in the league. Like, he can block well. Like, a lot of people had him really highly rated last year. Like, some people had him going in the first round. I think Daniel Jeremiah had him mocked to the Chargers at pick 17 last year. So it, like, there's a lot going on in regards to why you would then go out and spend that. And I know Brock Bowers isn't your orthodox tight end, and I know what he can bring after the catch and etc., and he is a slightly different player to Michael Mayer, but just get a wide receiver. Like, it just doesn't make sense, because you've invested high draft capital, which is high money. Again, it's high money on tight ends, really. So compared to the market, where if you would have taken someone like a Brian Thomas Jr. there, if you really wanted to do something like that to stretch the field. So you got Myers playing the flanker, and you've got Adams sort of coming on a little bit of age. You could have taken Thomas there, and I don't think you would be any different. And in theory, you've saved yourself some money, because wide receivers are going for a hell of a lot more than tight end. So it's just a bit of a weird one personally. Like, again, how they drafted, really, because you're crying out for a corner and crying out for a tackle, and they took neither.
Yeah, there were some good players left, wasn't there? I mean, they should have been one of the big beneficiaries of that quarterback run, shouldn't they? They should have been. Sit at 13 is an absolute dream when six quarterbacks to come off the board in the first 12, sort 100%. Of unexpectedly. And then they sort of make a bit of a strange move. Bowers at 13, just in isolation, is fine. It's just that there was just better options, I think. Wasn't there?
And it's like, if you looked at it, it is like, everyone's got like this, they haven't got a tight end behind him, but they've got Michael Mayer. Like, so you're just, it just, to me, it just doesn't make sense. It's kind of like the equivalent or lesser equivalent of what the Falcons have done, which you've got a quarterback and you've gone and drafted a quarterback for no real reason. You've literally just drafted a tight end last year, and now you've gone and drafted another tight end. Like, it's just a real bizarre one, really. When they had options of like Byron Murphy, like, you could have even gone like defensive if you didn't want to go corner or tackle. This Byron Murphy's on the board, and Dallas Turner. Like, are they best players available? You could argue that Brock Bowers could be in that conversation as best player available, but sometimes you have to compare it of what you, it's not just, oh, we'll take best player available all the time. It's, you've got to compare it of what you've actually got on your roster. Like, it just seems to me that it was just a little bit of a, oh, we'll just take best player and then it will sort itself out. I don't really know if the offensive line or defensive line as such will be able to make up for that pick, really, at 13 for Vegas.
Definitely an iffy one. Well, we'll move on to the rest of the positions. I'll sort of just group them all together. Went to go through each individual one. We'll start off with the bad. I mean, which team just sort of stands out as a reach on these other players? Is there anyone that sort of stands out as a bad pick? I think overall most teams sort of seemed to draft pretty well on value, didn't they? But there was a couple. What stands out to you as a bad pick?
I mean, we've touched on two, obviously, which I think Penix was one.
Yeah.
I personally think Leggett was one as well at 32. But if I had to pick one that was probably was just too high for me, would be Chop Robinson from Miami. I think that was, for me, just too high for a player with 15 tackles last year. Like, he's got that sort of high athlete mentality. Like, I thought that more late 20s, 30s is probably more, that's still rich for me, but it's probably more where you listen to people and talk around the league. Oh, your Chop's going to come off around there. And obviously he goes right up there when, in theory, Quinion Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, like Graham Barton, they could have done with, I feel like they could have done with them players a lot more than Chop, really. So that would be one where I would say I'm not a massive fan of that pick so high up.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that one. We'll get onto the more positive stuff. I mean, any big winners out there? I mean, as I said, that quarterback run has definitely seen some players drop. There's some players that I think we both expected to come off the board a bit earlier than they did. But I mean, which one is there a big winner out there, do you think, of this first round?
The big winner, I'd say, of the first round. I mean, don't think you can look further past the Philadelphia Eagles, could you really, for Quinyon Mitchell there? I really like the, I mean, how Quinyon Mitchell went to 22 and then Detroit move up and get Tyrion Allen at 24. I don't really know how the league let them two organizations do that, take them taking the two best corners of the draft. So that's them for me would be two that I would say that did really well. I think another team that I think did really well as well was how Minnesota navigated the board. Because obviously there was talk that Minnesota need to package everything together to go up and move up and get one of these quarterbacks. They didn't. They just moved up a tad, 11 to 10, take JJ McCarthy, still kept 23. And then they managed to be able to then move up again and get Dallas Turner, who I did mention that if the Falcons didn't take him, could he be one of the ones that fell? And which obviously did happen. He fell all the way down to 17 past the Colts, past Seattle, and then Minnesota moved up to get him. So you could argue that the Vikings did, I mean, they did a really epic job considering at one point everyone was touting them to be out, they're going to be after finance and move the hill to go and get one of these quarterbacks. And in the end, they didn't have to do that at all. So fair play to Minnesota. I think they navigated that first round really well alongside teams like the Eagles and the Lions, I think, did really well as well.
Yeah, I like that shout. Right, well, I think that brings us to the end of our first round coverage. We are going to be looking at day two and day three in the coming days. Well, where can people find more from Yash?
I'm on X or Twitter, and my handle is at Tilster999.
Okay, and you can find us at first and 10 underscore. Got loads coming up. New fantasy leagues, as always, they're going to be running. I mean, rookie draft running as we speak. I think most of them are wrapping up today, maybe tomorrow. But we have loads and loads of fantasy stuff. So make sure you go and follow there to get all the latest and be the first to hear about those. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, we will be back. I don't know when these are going out. We'll be back in the next couple of days anyway. Just keep an eye out. Make sure you're subscribed and you'll get all the latest episodes from us. But until then, we will see you next time.